September 17, 2010, the Norris Group returns with its award-winning event, I Survived Real Estate 2010. The Norris Group has assembled an incredible lineup of industry experts to discuss the state of REO from the inside, including regulatory intervention and aftermath, bulk buying myths and facts, and the opportunities emerging for eager real estate professionals. 100% of the proceeds support the Orange County affiliate of Susan G. Komen for the Cure. This event would not be possible without generous help from the following platinum partners: The Business Press, Foreclosure Radar, and Sean O'Toole, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, and President Bill Tan, Investors Workshops, and President Sean Watkins and Angel Bronskiest, Invest Club for Women and Iris Veneration, and Bobby Alexander, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association and Geraldine Berry, Claudia Buys Houses, Fry Wiles, the creative agency responsible for iSurvive2010.com, MVT Productions, who always provide our audiovisual needs, and White House Catering, who will provide the three-course meal for this black tie event. Visit iSurvive2010.com for details.
Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today our special guest is Ivan Choi. He's a 15-year veteran in mortgage banking with a background in finance, technology, retail loan origination and servicing. And he just began a company called Regional Mortgage Banking. And it's named Savia Home Loans. And also, he is president of REOMAC, a national nonprofit trade organization of mortgage servicing executives, asset managers, foreclosure attorneys, and real estate brokers. And I'm sure they are a very busy organization and also probably wondering what's next. Ivan, welcome to our show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me, Bruce.
Now, I noticed that do you still live in Riverside?
I do. I actually moved into Corona a little over a year ago. Until then, I was living in Irvine.
Okay. And you were in the mortgage banking business, and what was the years for that?
So for the last 15 years, just about, I've always been in retail mortgage banking. For most of those years, about 13, 14 years, I was with the former Countrywide Home Loans, which of course was acquired by Bank of America. I stayed on with Bank of America for another year, and long story short, I decided recently to try to start my own regional mortgage banking company. And also, I also have a second job with a national REO outsourcing company.
Now, mortgage banking is very different than being a mortgage broker. So could you explain the difference to our audience?
Right. So mortgage banking, you know, a broker is charged with trying to originate loans and then just simply putting them through one of the major mortgage banks for funding. And so you're almost kind of like a hired gun to try to find the best possible fit and the best possible pricing for the home buyer. The mortgage banker, on the other hand, is actually doing loans directly out of their own warehouse capacity, their own funding capacity. So the money that a mortgage banker uses is essentially theirs, And so that's kind of the main difference between the two.
How easy is it to obtain a mortgage warehouse line at this point?
Of course, with all of the meltdown that's been happening, it's very difficult today. Yes, very difficult. You know, there was one prominent mortgage executive who was with one of the big banks until about 2008. And he decided to try to start his own mortgage banking company. And this is somebody who had managed a national franchise of mortgage offices excess of 10,000 employees. And the biggest warehouse line that he was able to personally get was about 700,000.
Wow, that's not worth maybe a week's worth of loans, I hope.
Right. Yeah.
No. So once you're filled up, 700 grand is on the line. What do you do with it?
You basically, have to. You can either just keep it in the loan and just try to hold it on your books, or, you know, of course, in today's, you know, the modern age of mortgage banking, you, of course, try to take that loan and sell it to an investor, which will then provide you with liquidity to fund another $700,000 loan.
Okay. And when you sell it, the servicing rights and all that go over to whoever buys the loan. Is that correct?
Well, you can either sell the underlying note and service the loan yourself, or, as you mentioned, you can also not only just sell the underlying note, but you can also sell the servicing rights as well. You know, it's not always obvious to the common observer, but servicing rights to a loan, you know, the process of collecting payments and handling customer service, you know, believe it or not, that actually has a certain monetary value as well.
I'm in the loan business, and I service a lot of loans, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. I'm glad we do it.
Yes.
What surprised you most, let's say, in the years of 05, 06, as you were watching loan programs probably get pretty generous? What were your thoughts at that point?
Well, you know, it's kind of, I think the thoughts that everybody was having, and especially if you were in the business, you know, up until that time, you know, on the one hand, you were probably thinking, at least I was thinking, to your question, I was thinking that, wow, I can't believe that loan guidelines are this generous.
Mm-hmm.
And then the flip side is when the mortgage meltdown was started happening you know, things really began to get constricted in the mortgage business, I couldn't believe how tightly things had constricted and how difficult it was to actually obtain credit. So we definitely went through both extremes.
So we've swung the pendulum from allowing way too many people in to now making it very difficult for anyone to get in.
Right. What's traditionally observed as a quote-unquote make sense loan, you know, somebody who even in this market today, in this economy, has a great job with high pay, with a lot of money in the bank, all the things that a lender would look for, a lot of those folks have a tough time trying to find a normal mortgage loan to get into.
Now, since no one makes any money unless they fund a loan, what's the reasoning behind a no answer to a perfectly reasonable loan?
It goes back to the question you were asking earlier about the $700,000. You know, really today, the modern model of mortgage banking is that an originator originates a lot of loans for home buyers. They then take those loans, package them into securities, and sell them on the secondary market. And for anybody who's been following the news, the demand, the appetite for those securities in the secondary market has dried up. And so you no longer have the liquidity that mortgage originators relied on to be able to make loans in the first place. And that's why a lot of the quote-unquote make-sense loans, you know, some of them just can't be done today because there's just no demand for that loan.
So most of the business is now Freddie, Fannie, or FHA. Is that probably 95% of what's available?
Yes, I you know, depending on who you talk to as far as mortgage originators or mortgage lenders, but at minimum, it appears that a lot of people, you know, the percentage of their business that's now Fannie, Freddie, and FHA combined is typically, you know, north of 70%.
Okay.
And that's a minimum level.
Now, you also are involved in NuVista Asset Management, and give us an idea of what you do there and what that company does.
So NuVista Asset Management is a San Diego-based company that was established about 4 years ago by two veterans of the mortgage banking business. The two partners, Jim Park and Gary Acosta, they are both minorities. And they have a lot of connections, not just in the mortgage business world, but also in the political arena directly into D.C. And so they have a lot of connectivity all over the place.
Okay.
And so what NuVista does is they serve as an REO asset management company, as an outsourced company. And so basically any bank today that cannot handle REO inventory in-house, they would want to hire a company like NuVista to be able to offload some of those REOs to have NuVista dispose of on their behalf. And one of the differentiation points of NuVista is that it is a multicultural company. And, you know, I've said this to a number of people. Normally, I wouldn't pay attention to the multicultural piece as much. I mean, I'm a minority myself. But today, I'm paying attention to it because, you know, and I believe it's significant because the government in general does have a little bit of a bias towards working with companies that are either woman-owned and or minority-owned.
Okay.
So that you know, is a big differentiator.
How have their inventory levels changed, let's say, in the last 2 years?
It's changed pretty dramatically. And so, you know, of course, the casual observer, I'm sure, if you read the news, you know, you have a pretty good idea that foreclosure inventory is building up and has been building up for, you know, the last year or so. And long story short, there are a number of reasons, but during the past couple of years, the foreclosure process has been a little bit constipated. And so we have a backlog of properties that have yet to complete the foreclosure process. And so, again, long story short, without going to through all the details around it, I think we can finally expect, I mean, a lot of people have been expecting, you know, REOs to come to the market as real estate listings at some point. I think realistically from, you know, the current time, it'll probably be another 6 to 12 months before we actually can feel that we're in a foreclosure market and see lots of foreclosed properties actually being marketed by local real estate agents for sale in the local markets today.
I'm sure that would be a great relief to them because many of them were just completely slammed in 07 and 08, trained a lot of staff, and then all of a sudden they really didn't have much to do.
Right, right. And, you know, the thing is that there's a lot of talk and a lot of stuff being written about the quote-unquote shadow inventory.
Yes.
And, you know, what I just mentioned is that it's a backlog of foreclosures that have yet to finalize the foreclosure process. You know, when somebody says shadow inventory, you know, it could mean a number of things. The definition is not always clear. But what I've found, you know, I've spoken across the country to lots of different, you know, real estate groups about what's going on in foreclosure. When people typically use the term shadow inventory, they use it to also imply that, you know, there was some evil conspiracy by the big mortgage banks and by the government to artificially hold in properties from the market to do one of two things. It's either number one, to hold properties back and parse them out on a limited basis into the market so that they could help preserve valuations and thereby earn a better return on that property than they might otherwise have gotten. Because, you know, if you flood the property with all the available REOs, then you can expect that valuations will probably take a little bit of a dive, and therefore the bank wouldn't be able to make as much money. So I would submit to everybody, to the audience, that is not the case. I worked for Countrywide B of A for a long time and was very involved. The second conspiracy theory is that those bastard mortgage bankers are intentionally holding inventory back from the market to then play magic accounting on the backside to be able to earn great quarterly earnings releases to, you know, so that their stock won't tank. And I would just tell you that those two conspiracy theories are, in fact, untrue. Yeah, you know, again, I've been with a big bank for a long time, Countrywide Bank of America.
Okay, let's talk about those two things just for a second. Fannie and Freddie both have double the REOs than they did a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
The REO agents don't have double their listing. So what are they doing?
Yeah, so, you know, one interesting statistic that came out recently from Fannie is that somewhere in the neighborhood of they expect that somewhere in the neighborhood of a million properties will finalize the foreclosure process in fourth quarter of this year or first quarter of 2011.
Okay.
And so, you know, 1 million properties, that certainly is a lot of properties. But one thing to remember, one complication in all of this is that there's only so much capacity by, you know, asset management companies, by the banks themselves, by all the people that are involved in foreclosure processing, you know, there's only so much capacity for them to process those properties and then get them onto the local real estate market.
Well,
you know,
okay.
We know in California, for instance, you know, cities definitely aren't in a position to staff up with all their budget shortfalls. And so, anyhow, there's just not enough capacity.
Okay. Again, I'm not being argumentative, but let's say Mike Novak Smith, who's one of the leading REO agents in the country, you probably recognize the name.
Yes.
In 08, he had 900 listings. Today he has 105.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody handed him 900 files at the peak of the market, and now there's 1/9 of them, and yet mm-hmm. and yet Fannie or Freddie has double their amount of REOs. So there does seem to be a little bit of a disconnect between their ability to get properties to the market, and maybe the players have shifted. So maybe Fannie and Freddie are in fact understaffed and not being able to deal with the quantity, where the subprime seem to react probably quicker.
Mm-hmm.
On the other topic, where you have delinquencies extremely high in California, probably they've gone from 5% to about 12% in the last 18 months, and yet the number of foreclosures have in fact gone down. So I agree with you for the most part. The shadow inventory myth is in fact true. The lenders don't own all these properties, but what about the idea that they're actually refusing to foreclose on it? You have
there's another, you know, there's a number. I mean, so far we are essentially glossing over a huge topic. I'm trying to get to, you know, the main drivers that I believe, you know, the main points of what's happening today.
Okay.
But yeah, to what you just mentioned, you know, another complication is, you know, we all know, if you've been keeping up on the news, we all know that the government, whether it's federal, state, or local municipal governments, they're all involved in the foreclosure process now. And from the federal standpoint, there's certainly a heavy impetus to try to either modify loans or actually do short sales now.
Yes.
And so it's gotten to the point that, you know, the major servicers, while they won't go out and state it publicly, but I can tell you, having been there, you know, there's a certain paranoia within the major banks and servicers in actually going through with the normal foreclosure process now. Because if they go through the normal foreclosure process and, you know, in the process of trying to offer relief to the homeowner, if they still continue on after that without fully documenting what's going on, without, offering all the options, they could be called to the carpet after the fact by either the government or by a public service group later on down the line. And, you know, the finger could be pointed and the government may come back and say, look, big lender, you know, you denied this homeowner a loan modification in 2008. And the fact of the matter is, from our analysis, we think you actually could have offered one. And so, you know, now we're going to drag you through the mud.
Wow. So there's a lot of pressure on the lenders to really try to find other solutions. And, of course, like you said, there's government intervention and new programs. So now HAFA is the latest alternative, and that's certainly gaining steam. And one of the things that I wanted to mention is you have a REOMAC Education Summit in fall 2010, and it's in – is it in October?
It's in October in Hollywood, Florida.
And the title, New Challenges, New Approaches. So I would imagine an entire industry is having to maybe gear up for a very different 2011.
Absolutely. You know, the one of the central problems that's existed throughout this entire, you know, time period of foreclosure is that the banks and servicers are in a very awkward position, because on one hand they have to satisfy the homeowners, you know, their customers, and on the back end they have to satisfy the loan investors, and, you know, all the while, you know, you have the government kind of and other groups kind of beating down on the banks. And so the end result is we have a lot of government initiatives, we have a lot of legal changes, and yet, you know, the servicer still has to try to find a way to make everybody happy, including the loan investor that, you know, has ultimate responsibility of the underlying note. And so, yeah, in 2011, you know, I think a lot of the changes are going to be legal related. And I'm not so sure there's going to be many changes in public perception, because I think by this point, you know, everybody's gotten their shot at kind of beating down on anybody in the real estate industry, including the mortgage banks, most of all.
I would think it's been a pretty tough time for anybody associated with trying to make a living and getting a sense of what's next. Because if you're an REO agent in 07 and in 08, you know, you're real busy. You staff up, you train people, and then you have, you know, one-tenth of what you were expecting to happen. And all of a sudden now you're laying off people. And you really have to look at 2011 going, okay, is this going to actually – is it REO inventory actually going to show up, or are we going to have to start doing short sales exclusively?
Right. You're absolutely right. So REO brokers – you know, for anybody that knows the REO broker business, it's a very low margin business, and high, you know, you gotta have big teams to basically run a lot of volume. And so, you know, what's happened, of course, as we've talked about, REO inventory has gone down so dramatically that a lot of the professional REO real estate broker shops have had to lay off people in the midst of this impending surge in REO inventory. And so every good REO broker is fully expecting, they're trying to figure out ways to really be able to scale up, you know, rapidly, because, you know, they of course don't want to get caught with their pants down.
Sure. I mean, they don't want to lose accounts and not be able to service the volume. So it's,
right.
It's a catch 22. You can't staff up in advance. And yet you want to be there when the opportunity hits.
Sure.
Do you see a great increase in short sales for the next, say, 18 months?
Yeah. You know, in the past, I publicly stated that, you know, the release of the Home Affordable Foreclosure Act guidelines from the U.S. Treasury, what you brought up as HAFA,
mm-hmm.
those guidelines were released on April 1, and I had publicly stated that certainly was a game changer. From the standpoint that, you know, it was really unprecedented that the government would get involved to this degree on essentially mortgage servicing or foreclosure processing. And, you know, back to your question, though, to answer directly, I don't believe that short sales are going to pick up to the high degree that we would need them to pick up. You know, the numbers overall are increasing right now, and a lot of percentage increases, you know, keep getting posted in the media. But, you know, the one thing for everybody to really observe and pay attention to is that the overall numbers of short sales relative to the number of foreclosure cases is still very small.
It's very small, and it's so tedious. We're down to 30 seconds, but it's such a slow process that I can't see it becoming a major player versus the REO.
Exactly. Yeah, I fully expect that, you know, REO is really where things are going to go.
Okay. Well, Ivan Choi, thank you very much for joining us. And the event for REOMAC is October 20th through the 23rd in Hollywood, Florida. And it's a 25th anniversary of a very worthwhile organization. So, Ivan, thanks for joining us.
I appreciate it. Thanks again.
You bet.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate 2010. Adrenaline Athletic, Benton Investment Group, Community Reinvest Workshop, Del May Properties, Elite Auctions, Entrust California, Everlast Photography, Inland Empire Investors Forum, Keystone CPA, Landwood Title, Las Brisas Escrow, Lavis Financial Services, Mike Cantu, North San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Personal Real Estate Investor Magazine, Realty 411 Magazine, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Summit Solutions, Tony Alvarez, the REOMentor.com, WealthPoint, and Westin South Coast Plaza. To find out more about I Survived Real Estate 2010, visit isurvived2010.com.